I am going to move myself to a greater place of clarity about knowing what makes me happy.
Well, hello there. I'm Jessica Maness, and welcome to I'll Go First. The wise Sharon Weinberg joins us on today's episode to talk about how to make decisions, cure decision paralysis, and how to figure out what makes you happy, because good news, there is a step-by-step process to it. I personally think if you've had trauma, your ability to trust your intuition can sort of get blown to pieces. So I am so happy to bring Sharon on because she's not just talking about the theory of decision making, which is a very fascinating topic in and of itself, but she also is offering us a very, very detailed instruction guide on how to figure out what it is that we want. Everything from little decisions like choosing what restaurant you want to go to with friends to what makes you happy and bigger stuff like what do you want to do with your life? I honestly felt so relieved having a blueprint for making decisions from her, and I really hope you do too. Let's get started. Sharon Weinberg is a leadership, career, and business strategy coach. She is passionate about helping people elevate, expand how they activate their personal and professional leadership to have careers and lives that are fulfilling and growing. Wow, I love that so much. Thank you for joining us. You're so wise.
Thank you for having me. So thrilled to be here.
Sharon is a part of a fellowship called the Coaching Fellowship that I got to be a fellow for. She is a coach in the program, which provides 6 months free of coaching to young women who are doing amazing, world-changing things. And I got to be a part of it about 3 years ago, and it was such a massive blessing. So I know that you do such good work by volunteering your time to these amazing women.
Well, it's a joy. I mean, the organization, the Coaching Fellowship, is such a gift to young women who at the early stages of their career. And I think about, I'm coaching two women right now who are in Africa. Wow. And so adjusting the time is a little bit challenging at moments, but that's about it. But it's just such a wonderful opportunity to pay it forward when I think about my own career and how, wow, if I had had a coach in my 20s.
Oh my gosh, same.
Right? Or 30s. What it would have been like to have a really somebody who was just my advocate and would also challenge me, would make me help me look at things differently than, you know, I was able to either on my own or with my current support system or work. So I think that's the reason I do it, is that, and I have a daughter who's just finished college and she's going to be starting her career as a software engineer.
She is so lucky to have you. Oh my gosh, if I had a mom like you. Anytime I watch TV with my husband Chris, it's so funny because this has been happening more. Maybe it's because I'm in trauma counseling at the moment, but when I see parents, it's making me tear up a little bit. When I see parents that are good to their children and have special relationships with them, I always say, "I want one." And recently he was like, Jess, that ship has sailed. You're going to have to give that up. And I was like, wow, there's actually a lot of wisdom there. I'm just, because it's like, how do we reparent ourselves after that? And you've had such an amazing career and you've helped so many people.
I've been in leadership and talent development for nearly 30 years. So at this point, it's probably about 5,000 leaders.
Wow. That's incredible.
All the full range. So it's, and you know, everybody has issues and everybody is growing. There isn't a leader out there, even if they've been a leader for 30 years, that they don't have something to learn. They don't have something to refine.
Yeah.
They don't have something to expand on.
I think what was kind of special about me reaching out to you and having you on the show is just about this idea of decision making. Mm-hmm. And how hard that can be. I know as myself who's gone through trauma, or anyone who has had any, I mean, decision making is hard for anyone. That there it can be potentially especially difficult for people who have survived things like trauma. And so I wanted to explore that with you, and I wanted to kick it off sort of with this quote that I found, which is from a research study. And it says, it's talking about a study that they did about with participants to see their decision making. And the results were summarized by saying this. The participants would, for instance, choose the shape in the study that they had been warned against and make the mistake again and again. They also took a great deal of time agonizing over decisions, and when they lost, they became markedly upset and they were unable to correctly consider risk as an adult. And what stands out to me is, and resonates with me, well, there are a lot of things that resonate with me about that, but the one main thing is the agony over making decisions. So I wanted to kind of understand why you work with decision making, because I'm sure that the agony about it translates and is relatable to anyone in any position. And I think it's just such a unique thing. Can you talk a little bit about, I guess, that agony that people go through?
Yeah, I think the agony comes, and maybe if we don't even use the word agony, but the difficulty comes from a variety of angles. And so it's not one thing. So that's the first part. The first thing is, do you actually know how to make decisions?
What does that even look like? I've never thought of that before.
Yeah, I know. Most people haven't. They just kind of go about it. And the thing is that there's actual and there's whole bodies of work all on decision making. And it really is about looking at sort of what is, first off, you know, if we think about how you make a decision, and a simple one can be you flip a coin. Flipping a coin is a method of decision making. Rock, paper, scissors is a method of decision making. Those are very simplistic decision making approaches, and they shouldn't be used for big decisions. You know, you could flip a coin and say, are we going to cook tonight or are we going to go out to eat? Let's flip a coin. That's probably inappropriate unless somebody really doesn't want to, like, I really need to go out and, you know, can assert that. You don't want to use those kind of methods for really important decisions because they're much too simplistic. But if we think about how we want to make decisions, if I think about, for example, a life decision, right? A life decision could mean wanting a new career or wanting a new job or wanting to move or wanting to change the way you're showing up in your life personally or professionally. A place to start would be to start unpacking it.
I'm instantly overwhelmed already.
You have to start small. So rather than trying to kind of eat the whole sandwich at once, imagine like a great sandwich, you're sort of taking it apart. Oh, what's in the middle? Okay, there's lettuce. Oh, there's cheese.
What is a decision?
A decision is a choice. So if we think about, for example, choosing to go into therapy or choosing to work with a coach, that is a choice about wanting help and support to become or be our best selves. That can be a choice.
Yeah.
That can be the first place. Do I even want to do that? What are the advantages and the disadvantages of doing that? Okay, it's going to cost me money. I won't be able to go out to eat as much, or I won't be able to do certain things because, you know, Tuesdays at 6 is my time with my therapist or my coach. Okay, that's a choice. Then come the steps to actually activate that choice, which would be, let me go find a coach or a therapist and then make the commitment to showing up and doing the work.
So it gets super granular.
Yeah.
Is what I'm hearing you.
So you start at the top.
Yep.
Right? You start at, what do I want to have happen? And then you move to the place of, how do I narrow it down? And one of the ways we narrow our choices down is we identify, first off, what's important to be present? What has to be honored in this decision?
How do we figure that part out?
It's actually more about clarifying. And there's a decision process in clarifying. So for example, if you think about, we've all probably had situations, whether you own your own place that you live in or you rent a place, you go in whatever your budget is and you say, you know, you have in your mind, here are some things I want to have present. I want to have lots of windows when light is important to me. I want to have two bathrooms. I want to have two bedrooms minimum. I want to have a fireplace, or I don't really care if there's a fireplace. Or a friend of mine in New York a long time ago had one of those wonderful, where the bathtub was in the kitchen. Somebody else would have said, that's absolutely a no can do. I cannot live in a place that has a bathtub, the bathtub in the kitchen. That's a deal breaker. So that's a value. My value is.
Okay.
Right. One of my values is I want the bathroom separate from the kitchen completely and utterly.
The challenge that I've had is that I don't know what I want. And this is something I'm working through with my therapist, but she talked to me about when I was younger, my situation was life or death. I had to make the right decision for both my grandfather, who was very ill and also complicated by the fact that he was an alcoholic and was also abusive. And I had to care for him, but like, I didn't know how to care for myself either. So I had to put aside a lot of my own needs. And over time, the message that I think, or maybe the habit, or I'm not sure. And we talk about this when we think about ACEs as a child, when we are forced to make these decisions that put our own wants and desires and needs really aside, it gets engraved into our way that we think. So the process of how we, I guess, learn how to make decisions. So with my therapist has been pointing out to me is that even with small decisions, like what do I want for dinner or what do I want to do with my friends, is hard because subconsciously I'm trying to get the right answer. So I'm trying to decouple that stress and anxiety that's very bodily real from like figuring out, okay, what is it that I like? And like, as an example of this was that for a long time in my adult life, I only wore black. So it's like I didn't have to make any decisions about anything. And right. Even in a different way, then it goes all the way up to the top. How do I know what I want in life? You know, we're dealing right now with COVID and kind of the aftermath. I think a lot of people are asking themselves, what do I want for my life? And I am right. Just throwing my hands up in the air and like, I can't even make the small ones. How do I even make the big ones?
It's totally understandable, especially if you have had, I think, traumatic experiences as a young person, or if you have, even as an adult, if you have faced, I think, disproportionately severe consequences for decisions, which is what we're seeing now in terms of the protests, in terms of life as we have known it is not acceptable. This cannot go on. So the place to look at is, first off, don't beat yourself up. Making decisions is a skill like anyone, like any skill. What we don't realize is that when we're young and we aren't given the space to make certain simple decisions and not have disproportionate consequences, if we don't have those opportunities, we don't develop certain skills. We don't develop sort of a resiliency and a risk tolerance. What you were talking about in the quote was that there's two things that were occurring. One was that people, when they made mistakes, were linking making a mistake with failure. It's not the same thing.
Wow. I would see that.
It's just a mistake.
Wow.
It's not failure. So that's one thing. And then two, when that occurs, what ends up happening is people become risk averse because the consequences are way too high.
Yes. Yep.
So the better thing to do is be cautious. Or overly cautious.
Yes.
Or like I won't even make a decision.
Or anxiety. I mean, that's for me, for sure. It's like anxiety, paralysis.
Yes, exactly. So the place to go is, first off, when you're thinking about what do you want, the first place, and where I think people who have maybe have in a way a scar, a wound about that, is to just first off, give yourself permission. You actually are entitled to choose first.
Wow. That's big, that entitlement.
Huge. Wow. Huge.
Even hearing you say that, I'm like, wow, I get to do that for myself. I have the space to do it. It's definitely something I have to learn. I think that it's maybe frustrating for those who it comes so naturally. And it's like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I do this?
For some people, I think it comes naturally. What I would offer to you is we never know what anybody's inside story is. There are lots of people are very polished on their exterior. And on the interior, we have no clue what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And what may be a very easy decision for them in one arena, which is difficult for you, in an arena where you have ease, they may be in an absolute place of torture, inner torture, and confusion and paralysis. So make no assumptions that, as we know, we don't know people's backgrounds. We don't know sort of what is a sensitivity. But that first place that you must come from is, I'm actually entitled to make this decision.
Wow, that's so
Or I'm entitled to participate in this decision. If you're with a partner a group.
Yeah.
That I'm entitled to participate in this decision.
Man, right? That's so powerful. That seems like such a simple thing, but it's so powerful.
Yeah,
that permission and that trust for others and for yourself.
And so one of the practices to start building that, it's like any muscle. So practice for like a couple of weeks or a month, just giving yourself permission. Whereas maybe you wouldn't have done something like maybe you wouldn't have, I don't know, went out and bought a magazine that you don't normally buy and you think is sort of a waste of money, but you really want to read it. If you got the $5 in your pocket and you can spend it, spend it. Doesn't always have to be really big. We can start really small. I can be permitted to, in fact, take a longer lunch. I'm permitting myself to not work myself to the bone, to call it quits, that by 10 o'clock or whatever it is, I'm done with work.
I am thinking about how my perception, even before this call, when we started talking about having you come on the show, I was thinking, wow, I mean, you're working with really powerful people, executives in high places, and they're struggling with this. Like, doesn't really make sense to me. And it's really powerful to hear that, yeah, this is something that even people in positions of large companies or with a lot of influence struggle with on the day to day. And I think for sure it's easy for me to forget that. You mentioned this idea of trusting ourselves, and one of the areas that you talk about in your processes for work is how to challenge our assumptions and beliefs and how that affects how we make decisions. And so as I'm saying that, I'm always like, trust and knowing your worth, I think, is part of that.
Yeah, and that comes with it. I think the place about assumptions is, and this is, I do a lot of work with this with leaders of all ranges, not just executives, but we often don't surface our assumptions. They're there. It's like walking around with a sticker stuck on your pants on the back. It's there, but you don't know it.
Yeah, it's like subtly influencing.
If we're walking down the street and we step on gum, we can immediately tell how it changes our gait. Oh, there's something on my shoe. What's on my shoe? Let me stop and check. I got to go wipe that off. We can feel that. But until you surface your assumptions that you're using, you actually, in putting them out, not keeping them in your head. When I say surface, I mean get them out of your head. Put them on paper.
Oh, I see.
Especially if you're talking about when working with other people.
Yeah.
But even for yourself, get it out. What are my assumptions? Oh, my assumption is, this podcast is going to be a lot of fun. my assumption is that speaking in public is sometimes a little scary. An assumption that I have is I'll put something out that's meaningful for people, and I'll also put some things out that are going to fall flat.
Ooh, that sounds scary.
An assumption I'm holding is I don't care. Because you should take what you want and let go of what doesn't fit you. It's okay. I'll tailor it to an audience, but ultimately I'm detaching from it. Whether it's or not it's a value, I can't make that judgment for you. You can make that judgment for you. Your listeners can make that judgment for themselves.
Yeah.
And they'll take a nugget or two that's valuable, and the rest will just fade, and that's okay.
So I guess that what I'm hearing you say, it really does come back to giving yourself that permission.
To be present, to be part of it, to engage in the moment, in the process of whatever you're doing. But in decision-making, the first place is giving yourself the permission to participate in the decision-making. The next place is to look at what's this decision about? What's the why? What's the big why? And you and I talked about this when we were doing a little prep about often we get confused in decisions between our objective and our strategy. What we want to do or what we want to have happen and how to make it happen. Those are two separate things. So the piece that we just touched on about like what's important to me or our assumptions is actually part of the strategy. It could be part of the what if you were going to really unpack and you weren't maybe sure this is what you want. You could use it from that perspective. But you could also use it from the perspective about when you're thinking about how to make something happen. That can be a very useful place to say, what are my assumptions?
It sounds like almost the decision process is kind of similar for small ones, what I want to eat for dinner, and big ones, like what is my purpose?
Right. And it could very well be for small ones, because here's an example, is that for somebody who might have an eating disorder or somebody who might use food as a way of maybe managing their trauma, and part of what they want to do is maybe make healthier food choices, do a little bit less emotional eating, because that has a whole vicious cycle to it. Coming to that place of what do I really want to eat is, and spending a little bit, just a little bit of time, I don't want people to think it's putting it in a microscope. But for example, somebody who says, well, I'm, you know, going to go out and get a double cheeseburger because I want something indulgent. Okay. So the question is, where's the need for indulgence coming from? Is it coming from truly you've got like this mouthwatering craving for a double cheeseburger or if you're maybe a vegan, a double portobello mushroom burger, hold the cheese? Or is it coming from a place of I'm feeling disappointed in life, or I'm feeling disappointed in myself, or I don't like what's happening now and I need to distract myself? That's a very different motivation for the double cheeseburger or double portobello mushroom burger. The latter one, the one of the really, I really want to have that because I'm craving it. And boy, I've been thinking about this for all week or whatever, is really about nurturing oneself. The other part about using it as a distraction or a reward or an avoidance technique so you don't have to deal with what's difficult that's going on is not healthy. And ultimately, it won't be satisfying and you're back at square one. You're still back at square one.
This is so wise, and I would never think about the emotional impact. One thing that does come to mind is, what about when it's scary / maybe terrifying to take the breath and observe and say, oh, wow, this is like a reward versus I'm trying to avoid something. Maybe actually, yes, I am trying to avoid something, oh, that's really scary. I'm just going to stuff all that emotion down and move forward anyway. What if it's really scary to look at yourself in the mirror?
Well, and I can completely appreciate that. And what I would say is the emotional muscles that are related to us being willing to explore and examine ourselves and then accept ourselves are not fully formed the first time we try. So maybe the first step is just being willing to notice, just being willing to say, I'm kind of going to check in with what my motivations are here. And you find out it is actually about what you're trying to avoid. And you still have the double cheeseburger, the double portobello mushroom. Make sure that you acknowledge yourself for checking in with yourself. And keep doing that. And at some point, what will happen is there will be a little switch that just turns within you because you have been honoring yourself, at least the acknowledgement. Like I may still do something not so great, but I know I'm doing something not so great versus I may be doing something not so great and I'm not even aware of it. You can still be a choice. I have a sweet tooth and I will never give up sugar. Very clear about that. I'll never give up sugar. Halloween was my favorite holiday as a child.
Yes.
Candy.
Same.
After really wonderful fresh fruit, candy is my favorite sugar form. Okay. I'm never giving it up, but I can moderate it, how much I eat. I buy a small amount or I buy one bag. I don't go and buy $50 of licorice from Licorice International, which I have done once and ate all the licorice in less than a month. So I know myself. I know I'm not going to go to zero. But I also know that there's things that I can do that I don't feel good about myself if I eat three bags of, you know, licorice. So I don't have three bags in the house. I have one.
Wow. So kind of putting limits on that, or I guess not even limits, containers.
Putting a container, but not moving into that place of making myself bad. This is a choice. Somebody else would say, well, you know, I've made a choice to not have sugar at all. So the place to start is start small. It's the first step. And I think sometimes what happens for people who have had a history of, if you've been in terms of trauma or in terms of difficulty around decision-making, and especially this piece about what happens if I make the wrong decision, that paralysis that occurs can really keep people from taking the first step. And understand, you can take just one step. I mean, there are other times we have to make the full decision.
Yeah.
And the piece about the assumptions is you can write out everything that you have. What are all the assumptions that, you know, are swirling through my head and my heart about this decision? An assumption can be, I hate having to make this decision.
Yeah, right? That's real.
An assumption can be something like, there aren't any good outcomes. There are no good options. So if we go in with that, that will affect our decision-making. But sometimes getting it out first is a first place. The next step. Writing it down is a great way, because the next step is to ask the question, is this true? If you're going to say yes, you have to absolutely 100% be sure it's true and can in a way validate it. So the concept of there are no good options.
Yeah.
I have a 15-year-old son who likes to put me up to dares or the would you rather.
Yeah. That sounds like a dangerous thing to do between a son and a mom.
Exactly. And the would you rathers typically are kind of less than desirable alternatives.
Yeah.
Would you rather eat a banana slug or would you rather lick a toilet seat? Something that has an equal gross factor or an equal ick factor or whatever else. I think I chose to eat the banana slug. So
yeah.
Assumptions are the first place, in fact, where we can create confusion.
Yeah.
And we can create kind of, we add to the paralysis because we kind of don't know what's present. So if you can get that out, that's, and then go through a validation process. And let's say the assumption of there are no good options here.
It was exactly what I was thinking. You read my mind.
Unless you knew absolutely 100%, you'd actually have to say, no, that's not true, which in fact then invites you to explore the options. So the place to go is not just accept them, but in fact, force yourself a little bit to ferret out, to vet, is there truth there?
Wow.
And that can help really in terms of going, yeah, this isn't pertinent. Get rid of that. Or that's not true. Okay, so now what do I want to bring in? Or maybe there's things I need to bring in that I haven't considered that will help me with the decisions.
So you and I did get a chance to talk about just a process for decision making. Can you give us like a 1, 2, 3?
So as I said a little bit earlier, one of the important things and one of the places that I see all sorts of people make decision making harder for themselves is not separating out the what, the why, the what, and the how. And because they aren't the same. And they need to be sort of separated out sequentially. Specifically, you don't do the how until you do the why and the what first. Because otherwise, what are you going to be working towards? So what ends up happening often is people jump straight to the tactics, which are the action steps, but they aren't really grounded in why they're doing something and the what of what they're doing, both in a general and a specific way. And that's where, in part, then you don't get good strategy on the how, and you don't get good tactics, and you don't get good commitment. Because what is it anchoring to? This is something all of us, whether you have trauma in your life, past or present, or not, I think every person has times when they've got to create clarity about how they want to live their life and move to a different place of intentionality. You tend to be a bit on autopilot until it doesn't work. It's kind of like breathing. You don't notice yourself breathing until you can't or until you have difficulty.
Yep.
We don't notice our organs or our limbs working until they don't.
Yeah.
That's the kind of the way, there's something beautiful about that. But at the same time, it can mean that we go on autopilot a lot, which is not good. We talked about the idea about taking care of oneself. And specifically from the perspective of taking care of yourself in the way that you want. So if that becomes the anchoring why, taking care of myself in the way that I want or in the way that is good for me, the way that is fulfilling for me, that can be an anchoring why in terms of taking care of myself is my responsibility, first and foremost.
And it's right? Your opportunity. You get to do
and
that.
It's my,
what you talked about earlier. That's
exactly. It's both my, and that's a wonderful one. So taking care of myself is both my opportunity and my responsibility. So if we go into the next stage about, okay, now how do I activate that? A goal would be, and we think about goals as general, goals typically are general, they're not very specific, is knowing what makes me happy or knowing what makes me fulfilled, knowing what enriches my life. And that's a big one for a lot of people. Like they're not sure.
Yeah. Right? I definitely in a whirlwind. And then you add in the people pleasing, the survival right. mechanism, the failure, what hasn't worked. This has got me in trouble before. None of this works. I give up.
So the permission piece comes in here is even being able to step into that and say, I am going to move myself to a greater place of clarity about knowing what makes me happy. Not just assuming it's going to plop into my life. I've got to be intentional about it. There's an old joke. I don't know who made who said it, but there was a joke that they said, I said when I was a little kid, I wanted to be somebody when I grew up. And they said I should have been a little bit more specific.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
And I think that's a really wonderful kind of, you know, analogy for what happens when we aren't intentional. Just stuff will happen. It just not may not be the stuff that you need and want to have happen.
Yeah, time will pass, and then it for me it's filled into that cycle of shame and guilt. And something that my friend and I have been talking about is like, oh, all that time that's passed and I haven't done anything, I didn't take the opportunities that were put in front of me, and I'm so mad at myself. Now I'm just gonna go ahead and take all that sugar or eat that burger, avoid my feelings, and go Netflix binge.
Which a lot of people do. They check out.
Yes.
Because there is a comfort in that, or it's not even a comfort. It may be a habit. So yeah. To move ourselves into a different place. So if our goal is to know what makes me happy, then we move to a higher level of specificity to what's called an objective, and they aren't the same. A goal is general, an objective is specific. So the objective is I can take action to do things that make me happy starting this week. So you can see that it's at a much different level. I've created some kind of time frame to make it happen. I've added some kind of verb. Objectives should have some verb on what exactly are you going to do? It's got to be much more activated, and it has to be have some clarity. Now, there's still here, you know, I can take action to do things. We still don't know, but that's okay. I think that we don't have to, you know, sometimes we're taught to be so narrowly specific that that just may not work for certain people. You might need to give yourself a little bit more spaciousness and understand that some of that defining will come a little bit later, but it has to come a little bit later. Otherwise, you can't know how to be intentional. So the goal is know what makes me happy in my life or in this moment in my life, my chapter of my life. The objective is taking action to do things that make me happy starting this week. And now we move to strategy. Strategy is not the same as tactics. Strategy is general. Imagine that it tells you the path that you're going to walk. I'm going to walk down 57th Street.
Yeah.
But it doesn't tell you how many steps you're going to take in walking down one block at a time at 57th Street, mm-hmm. or whether you're going to be, if anybody's watched the skit, the Monty Python Ministry of Silly Walks, what's your silly walk going to look like? It doesn't tell you that. It's just saying, this is the direction I'm going in. So a strategy would be identify experiences, things, and people that make me feel good about myself and bring me joy. That's general strategy. It's saying, not specifically, having a conversation with Jessica brings me joy. That's a tactic. It's just saying, okay, what I want to be doing is identifying what are those things, experiences, things, people that bring me joy, that make me feel good about myself. Do I even know that?
Right. How do you find out?
How do you do that? Well,
yeah.
That's when you got to get specific. And so you move to a tactic, and I called it, I'm going to create a personal menu of happiness.
Oh my gosh. I love that so much.
So now we have to look at, okay, how do you make a personal menu of happiness? I would suggest for people to brainstorm 50 to 100 things that, or experiences or people that make them feel good about themselves, make them laugh, bring out the best in themselves, make you excite you. They're exciting for you without having in a healthy way. So going gambling, if you've got a gambling problem, is not, it may be exciting, but it's not a healthy option. But so, and the reason 50 to 100 are important, some people say, oh God, I can only come up with 10. No, you can't. You can come up with a lot more. So in the brainstorming, when we brainstorm, there's no judgment in this first stage. It's what's called ideation. You're just coming up with ideas. So write down everything that comes up, one item per line. And the reason to go kind of to 50 to 100 is you've got to, the first level, the first maybe 10, 15, even 20 are kind of at the surface. They're kind of like what we're safe with.
Yeah.
The next levels might be much more, they're just bigger. Maybe they're subtler. Maybe they're a whisper, but they're there. Maybe it's one of those things of, I love to pass that garden on X Street and stop and smell the roses. It doesn't have to be big, doesn't have to be expensive, doesn't have to take a lot of time, or it could. It could be one of my best friends lives, I'm in California, and one of my best friends, long time friend from high school, lives on the East Coast. And so about once a year, we have a weekend together, just the two of us. Now that's indulgent, but at the same time, it's what we need. And the rest of the time we're on the phone together, or we write. So it doesn't have to only be very small things. Allow yourself all of it. Because the first step is just your ideating. You're just getting ideas out. Could be things that you're familiar with, could be things that you're not familiar with. Like, I really want to try 5 different flavors that I never buy at the ice cream store. Okay. Could be something like that. The next stage after that is, once you've got about 50 to 100 down, is circle 15 to 20 of them that really resonate with you, that pop out. We're starting to move into a place sort of synthesizing. You can't, a list of 100 is too much. So it would cause
overwhelm
and decision paralysis.
Oh,
so now,
yes.
Now we in fact have to start whittling it down. So the first place is, if you wrote about 50 to 100, choose about 15 to 20 that pop out at you. Just circle them.
Okay.
Without a lot of deliberation, just it got kind of gut intuitive feeling. Then put a star next to the first 5 within the ones you circled that you'd want to start with. So we've gone from, let's say, 100 to 20 to 5.
Wow.
You're not crossing out all the other ones. You just leave them there. Don't cross them out. Just leave them there, right?
And while you're doing it, I guess I'm just guessing here, you're putting aside all the, yeah, but, well, that wouldn't work.
Yeah, no, none of that. None of that. Put that on holiday. You know, put that, what do we want to call, you know, Yasmin, yeah, but she's on holiday.
Yes, she's having a great time.
She's having a great time on holiday. She's not available to participate.
Oh my gosh, that is amazing. Yeah.
So just put it on holiday. At this stage, all you're doing is you're trying to create both direction and clarity for what the action might be. So now we're at the stage of, you've identified 5 of them that you want in your life more now, right now, starting this week, next week. Select which are going to be your first 2. And it doesn't have to be, oh, I got to choose a person and a thing or an 2 experiences. Whatever calls out to you works. Don't make it overly complicated. Whatever calls out to you, if it's really, you know, things that you say, wow, this would be easier for me to do, do it. The intention is to move you to action. Real, purposeful, conscious action in service of you. So choose your first two. You'll come to the other three or so at the right moment. And then the next piece would be define the first two steps you need to take to activate those. So if I had put down, have a call with Jessica as one of my things that brings me joy, because it does, it would be, in fact, maybe to put on my calendar, send Jessica an email about setting up a time to talk, or give Jessica a call, even if she's not around, and leave her a voicemail. But to actually put that in my calendar, that I do it so that it doesn't go to the, God, I forgot to do that again.
Yes, and I feel like that feeds into the shame monster.
Yes, and it feeds into that place of, I can't make stuff happen.
Yes.
Or I can't make myself happy.
Wow, that deeper meaning there.
Yeah, and that's, or this is too much. That's why I say the first two steps. When I do strategic planning with clients, they can be very complex action plans. And even then, what I will do, sometimes these are things that go on for years at times, I'll say define the first 10 steps. Because there's no point in defining the 20th step by and large, because you never know what's going to change. After you do the first two steps, now you can ask yourself, what else do I need to do to complete this, or to complete it from a standpoint of bringing it into my life? There may be a couple more steps you need to do, or it may be that I called you, you called me back, and we set a time to talk, and now we're having a talk. Doesn't have to be complicated.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a trap that I fall into. And I
we
think
all
you're
do.
Really hitting on a point of then feeling incapable.
Oh, and it feels overwhelming. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I definitely came into this interview thinking that I was just missing something easy that was right in front of me. But what I'm learning from you is, man, there are all these different deeper drives that are influencing, giving ourselves permission, learning how to trust ourselves in the tiny things, feeling that you have the right to make a decision and know what you want. Maybe even some hope in there.
And then the last piece of it is to acknowledge yourself. Okay, I followed through on this. Or if you tried and it didn't work out, you still deserve the acknowledgement of, I tried to make this happen, it just didn't work out. Maybe that item gets sort of put back into the list, put back into the passive large menu of things that make you happy, and you bring something else out. And so you always then have, you can bring in, after a while, there might be something on the list of, oh, I want to go, I don't know, parachuting, jump out of skydiving. That's probably not going to be a weekly experience for me. I might just do it once. So that one might just be kind of like, okay, I did that. That was exciting. I did that, and I don't need to go there again. So I might retire it. Just like a chef, think about it as a restaurant. Chefs always, always, always have items on their menu they retire because customers either aren't buying it, or it's lost fat, it's no longer desired, or the ingredients necessary aren't available, or the cooking staff are tired of making it. Whatever it may be, they step into, I don't always have to have that on the menu. I can take that off and put something new. So you are always at that same choice.
Wow. Yeah. I feel just so much more, I guess, empowered. It feels like these skills were not right in front of us, because I don't want to diminish the challenge there, but that we kind of already have the toolkit that we need to practice and grow. because we are making decisions all the time. We make the decision to brush our teeth, to wear clothes if you do that sort of thing, or to have friendships.
To go to work.
Every moment you're making a decision. I'm sitting down right now.
Right. So I just would offer to people, be a little bit less hard on yourself. It's all about practice. And I can tell you that even people who are the really big time kind of making really, really big life and death decisions. If you think about the work of medical professionals who often are, and certainly what we've seen in the last several months of having to make some very, very difficult decisions with enormous constraints and enormous pressure. And are there mistakes that have occurred? Absolutely. But that's not failure. So don't equate that. Create the space to just keep moving forward. There's always learning that's taken place. And I think part of the difference between at times the limitations that we were locked into about choices or the range of choices we had as children or adolescents or young adults, I would encourage you to also step back where you are right now in your life, maybe a very different place, and you don't have to hold to those rules anymore.
My therapist has been telling me to remind myself that you're safe and okay. And I just, that comes to mind when you mention this part about kind of almost rewriting the narrative and giving yourself, again, permission. What is something that you're learning about yourself that you've sort of learned over this process with working with so many incredible people?
I think one of my big learnings over the last 10, 11 years really has been about really trusting my intuition more and not worrying that even if I'm offering, let's say, a perspective or I have a certain approach, that if somebody else has a different approach, that doesn't mean that mine doesn't work. It just means there's two. And so not making up a narrative about worthiness or this is less than, sometimes it is. And sometimes you go, you know what? Yeah, that's a much more robust whatever. Great. So how can I fit into that? How can I morph mine to adopt some of these wonderful things I'm seeing there? But to not take it to a place of somehow wrongness because of the where, whatever I've created to that point. And I think that's really opened up. It's allowed me also for things that no longer serve me to release them. Like, I don't want to be carrying that crap around. I'm done with that. That approach doesn't work anymore. We're done. Let's try a different one. This is the one I use now. I don't use that one anymore. And I think that's just liberating to be able to say, okay, just because I created it, I don't have to carry it with me all the time. Or just because that was my experience previously, doesn't have to be my experience each time. That I'm at choice about what I allow in and also how I honor myself in where I'm at and what I have to give in any moment.
You are absolutely brilliant. This has been so enriching. I have learned so much. I hope those of you listening, I think the message I'm also hearing, Sharon, is that to give yourself a lot of permission and grace and compassion and self-care and love.
Yeah.
Thank you so, 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 so very much.
Thank you.
For joining us on this episode. It is, yeah, truly, truly a gift. Thank you.
Thank you. I so enjoyed being here and being in conversation with you.
I'm Jessica Minhas, and thanks for joining us on I'll Go First. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Our mission is to uplift and support you in your journey of healing. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, comment, and share. And if there's a topic you'd like us to dive deeper into or would like to share your story with us, we are available on all major platforms at I'll Go First and www.illgofirst.com. We'll see you next time.